The following is a Stick Boy We Talk production.
The following contest scheduled for one fall.
I am the man.
If you're the man, what the rock is talking. Woo! The best there is.
Welcome to the One Fall Podcast. I'm the very sick Joel, who's back again after a what was considered an absolute crazy weekend in professional wrestling. I am joined by the talented, the two-time G1 winner, Mo. How are you doing, Mo?
The futurist. As I know you're extremely sick, so I'll just sit back and let you do most of the talking.
That's the way it's supposed to be, isn't it?
Yeah.
We're going to jump right into it. And I think this weekend was wild for just everything that happened. And the three things that happened this weekend that just proves that maybe sometimes you just have to stay off Twitter. First thing's the Tessa. The second one was the breaking news about Marty and what that means for wrestling as a whole. And the other one was the back and forth between Gabe Sapolsky and David Starr. And all three of those things happen in a very, very short span, and they're all very interesting and all play a role in some way or another the future of professional wrestling. Plus, we've had Monday Night Raw, we have AEW tomorrow. There's a lot going on. So let's talk Tessa. It's funny because me and Josh had done the end of the year podcast that you can go and listen to, and we both picked Tessa as our female performer of the year, and it looked like she was about to beat Sami Callihan at Hard to Kill for Impact. Things seemed to be going decent for Impact, and then she sent out a tweet about women supporting women, and then the floodgates just opened up about accusations against Tessa. One which includes her spitting on a performer and calling her the N-word. And there's just a bunch of different women from across the board that reported allegations of abuse and bullying behind the scenes. Some of them have tempered off. Some of them have kind of been called out as fake. It's very hard to tell and cipher through what's real and what's not. And at the end of all of this, Impact gave her the World Heavyweight Championship, and it was met by a speech where she didn't apologize for her behavior at all. It was more of, we make mistakes, this is my crowning moment, woohoo, and now she is the first female to ever win a World Heavyweight Championship in a promotion of a decent size. What are your thoughts, Mo?
This is a complicated one, isn't it? It's because the allegations that allegation you referenced, I believe, was 2017. Yeah. So we're not talking that long ago. We're not talking so long ago that the stuff that we've seen in the past, you know, I don't know what the length of time is to make these things right. But I don't think, you know, a little over 2 years is enough.
Yeah.
To say, oh, we were young, we made mistakes. That just doesn't seem right to me. And while some things can be called out as fake and this and that, I mean, the fact is that this is a person with a reputation, you know, already. And it's already, to some degree, up to now, hindered her career and her chance to be in with big promotions, making bigger money. And then TNA, Impact, let's call it Impact Wrestling, I guess, they actually put the belt on her, and it's tone deaf. And I noticed with that crowd there, that largely she was the babyface that night and all, but it's just... What else? But what are you going to do? Because it's not like these things weren't new to them. They were aware of the allegations beforehand. Inside circles in wrestling, everybody was aware of it. Yeah. You know, and so for them to say, well, now we can't put the belt on her because it's come out. It's like, well, then they look bad if they put the belt on her. But if they don't put the belt on her, they look bad because they already knew and they were willing to put, you know, you're only pulling back the belt because it got found out, not because you're actually in any way, shape and form. If you're Scott D'Amore
Don Callis,
thank you. I was going to say Cyrus there. It's not because you're in any way are actually offended by or don't want to support a person who did these things recently. So I don't. She looks bad. She looks terrible. That promo looks terrible to me. But Impact itself, I wouldn't say that they've gotten good momentum or publicity at any point in time. But I would say that people don't have the same feelings about them that they did when it was Russo and Dixie Carter and that ownership group and people running it. They've largely kind of put that, I think a lot of that stink behind them. This to me is a whole new stink that's just as bad. And it just makes me want the company to go away. Just, all of this just makes me want the company to go away.
You look at it as a whole, and you look at the situation, and you look at – you're absolutely right, because it is more or less it got caught, and now you're kind of like, well, what do we do? Well, we were going to put the title on her regardless. I mean, there have been stories out there, nothing concrete, but there have been stories out there of her chasing after Ricochet at the Performance Center, and that's why one of the reasons WWE didn't want to give her a contract – at that time was she had apparently gone after Ricochet, accusations of cheating, and this was a whole big mountain of mess between these two. And you notice Ricochet was very quiet on social media this weekend, and probably rightfully so. Don't stick your nose where it doesn't belong, and don't get involved in things that can be have a negative spin. It's so easy to spin things in so many different ways. It's better to just stay out of it. But that promo is just brutal. You hear the promo and you go, you could have owned up. You could have apologized. You could have been like, you know, I've made mistakes. I've done things I'm not proud of. I've caused problems. But this moment, this title, everything with this is my chance to right my wrongs and work at being a better person and be the champion that I should be for this company. Simple and easy. I pulled that out of the top of my head, and I have no charismatic skills at all.
That's true.
And it's well documented. We have, what, 169 episodes of this podcast to verify that?
Sorry. You made it too easy. But you're right. That is the biggest problem here, though. Is that's where my I get most upset. If you say it's hey, everybody makes mistakes, that's an excuse. If you say I did this, I screwed up, I am aware of it, I'm trying to become a better person, I'm not there yet. Please, you know, something like that. Even what was his name? He's injured currently now, but he was on NXT, came up, was getting a big push, huge guy. It's the bodybuilder forums. Pardon me?
Lars Sullivan.
Lars Ooh. Sullivan, thank you. At least Lars Sullivan much more owned it. And it's a similar thing. And even then he got a major punishment. And he owned it a lot more.
Yeah.
He got a major punishment. She doesn't own it and gets the world title, which in its own level is ridiculous to a large degree. Yeah.
It's very interesting because, I mean, we'll talk about this a little more in the podcast, but La Parca passed away in AAA. Now, he's not the original La Parca, and the reason I bring this up is he mistimed a dive and went headfirst into the barricade and passed away from kidney and lung failure. And when you're wrestling, you're trusting the other person across that ring from you. And there's a good handful of people I feel like you could trust in that ring and you could feel safe with. But you look at this Tessa situation, you look at just you look at the Charlotte thing that happened at TLC, what she did to Kairi Sane, and you go through and you pick these little moments where someone that's flown off the handle has harmed another colleague. And it makes you kind of question. You're put in this big spot where you're wrestling with the guys, and that in itself is a whole other can of worm that people are mixed on. It's not intergender wrestling is all positive or all negative. It's a very complicated mixed bag where people have different feelings on it, and that's perfectly fine and acceptable. If you don't support it, you don't have to watch it. If you do, then watch and support it. It's really that simple. But now you've got it where Tessa's going to be wrestling the guys, and I think they were even teasing her wrestling the Knockout champion, which is I don't remember her name.
Taya Valkyrie or something like that.
Yeah. There were teases about having both titles on the line. And now you're creating this whole thing where this moment that you've created with Tessa where she can fluctuate between the guys and the girls, but how much can people trust her in ring if she gets mad at you, what's going to happen in ring? Is she going to take a cheap shot at you, or is she going to take care of you? That's the biggest thing. Like, the professional wrestling is a game of inches where it just takes one wrong move for someone to die, and that happened at the end of last year. So it creates a lot of questions, and it makes you wonder why carry through with this, because you clearly, that's all people are going to be talking about. They're not talking about the decent match that you had or the pay-per-view or anything along those lines. It's just the negative aspect of all this. So when the history books look back and see Tess as the first world heavyweight champion, there's an asterisk next to it. Mm-hmm. And do you really want that asterisk? And I guess they did.
They just weren't going to change their plans. I don't think anything was going to cause them to change their mind in any way, shape, or form. And yeah, I'm totally not. I'm not a big fan of intergender matches. You know, to begin with, personally. So, I mean, that probably doesn't help. Then my own personal wishes to not do that, I don't think it's necessary. I don't think it empowers the women. I think what empowers the women is by letting them go out there and compete against each other and have an incredible match and get the crowd to give them a standing ovation or whatever. And that's what, you know, because they're just as good. But at the same time, the best player in the WNBA is not going to be able to beat the best player in the NBA, or even generally a much lesser player in the NBA. It's just not realistic. And I like some realism to my wrestling. And I do think I want the women to be placed in a good place. I want them to have opportunities to be every bit as good and every bit as famous and every bit as everything as the men. But I don't think it's by putting them in there against men. I think it's because what it says is, oh, you aren't good enough unless you beat a man. That shouldn't be the case. That shouldn't be the case. You're good enough regardless, because when you're facing other women, because they're good too. That's my point of view on it.
No, that's absolutely. I haven't seen enough intergender wrestling. I don't think I've sought it out enough to be like, oh, this is the way it should be. It creates a very interesting conversation, because you move forward with that, and I'm very curious what the reaction would have been without the scandal. How people would have felt about Tessa in the spot. And Tessa's very talented. Because there's a lot of scummy people in pro wrestling. There's a lot of downright horrible people. Ultimate Warrior being an example. But you can pause that for a second and look at the in-ring quality that these people, that certain people spit out. Tessa is extremely talented. And we now go to the summer where she's going to be a free agent. Does she stay with Impact, Mo, or do you think she goes to WWE, or is this...
This ruins all that. I can't imagine... WWE in particular is not going to touch her, no. There's absolutely no chance. There's WWE and AEW won't touch her. Those two companies won't touch... Who's going to touch her? Nobody is going to, except for Impact Wrestling. They're the only ones. is there a time? We've seen it with Hulk Hogan. Is there a time when enough time they believe lapses that it will be something that WWE would be willing to do? Yes. We don't know what AEW's stance on these things would be largely to this degree yet. But WWE would when they think it's a long enough, you know, period of time, and they think there's enough distance, just like they did with Matt Riddle and his pot smoking, and then he got him kicked out of the UFC. You know, eventually they figured it was okay, but it's going to take some time, so it's not going to happen this summer. And I don't feel bad for that fact personally. I mean, if she doesn't get the opportunity, even though she's talented enough in ring. And you know, as a personality and all, even if she's talented enough, because if that's the punishment for behavior, I think that's a good thing.
Yeah, absolutely. Because the podcast is based out in Calgary, so we had a very tumultuous point in, I believe it was November, with the head coach of the Flames, with Bill Peters, and the accusations that came out, and they just started piling up, and he's no longer the coach of the Flames, and we're first place in the Pacific, so it's kind of worked out where you've removed a negativity, and the punishment was just, and it's something similar. I find it very hard to separate these two, from Peters to Tessa, where you're, because I look at it as you're being relied on as being the face of the locker room now, and you're being relied on as being the leader. And if you don't have those traits, you shouldn't be in that spot. And I just, after everything that's come out, it makes me question if she has those traits to rally a locker room, especially something that Impact has been through so much. There's so much stink attached to it that now you have just a little more stink to it, which is a shame.
I think that's a really good point that you made. I mean, the idea, you are the locker room leader. You're looked at to draw the crowd. You're looked at to draw the ratings. You're also the first person that's out there for media. The person you want to put out there for media, any sort of media appearances that you can get, do radio spots, if you can get local TV, whatever you do, anything, you know, Sports Illustrated, whatever it would be. Ideally, it would be a woman. Ideally, it would be a world champion. And this woman, unfortunately, now is somebody who probably was going to get those type of opportunities, because it's an interesting story that she's the first face of the you know, a national promotion to get the world title in such a way. She might have gotten that stuff, but now do you want to put her out there? I don't think you do. And if you are in the locker room and you were aware of all this stuff, yeah, I mean, I personally, or even if you weren't and now you are and you believe it, or any of those people are your friends, like, I just can't imagine this is good for morale. I don't know. Maybe it is. Maybe everybody supports her because she believes her. Maybe she's being awesome in that locker room. To me, I don't know. Here's what I would have done. I would have somehow made a. I would have, even if it was Taya Valkyrie, I would have somehow at the point after she wins the women's title, I would have made it a three-way and had her win it, if that's what you want to go with, or somebody else. Like, that's what I would have done. I wouldn't have taken her out of the match. I would have had her in the match, but I would have somehow found a way to make it a three-way and to put it on somebody besides Tessa. Taya Valkyrie, if you wanted to go with a woman, probably would have been the best one. But that's, I don't know. They didn't do it, so.
Yeah, it's full steam ahead for TNA, and in a lot of ways, I feel like it's already blown past. Like, I feel like when you look at stories about Tessa, it's a lot of locker room supports her. Tommy Dreamer came out and said the locker room supports her. And it sounds like everything's full steam ahead for Tessa and Impact, but I don't know how the crowd's going to react, and I don't know if she's going to draw for the audience, because here's the thing, Tessa is very talented, and she is a draw, but she's lost bookings now. You heard that crowd response was, eh. You almost have to look at it as, you forget that she's a woman, you kind of try to look at it at the same as you would as the men, because now she is on that level, and she's probably better than some of the men that you have in that locker room. And now you got to sit there and you got to really look hard at it. And you can't be like, well, she's a woman, so we have to take it easy. No, you're in the spot. Now it's, you got all that pressure. You have the pressure that Guerrero and Benoit had on them put on themselves for drawing and for being leading the locker room forward. So it's going to be very interesting to see how she handles that and how audiences respond. Like, is this something that's going to pop the ratings? Because you look at it, you mentioned something about professional wrestling and being talking to the media and being that the world champion. You know, you say what you will, but Miz has always gone out and talked to the media. Becky's always talked to the media. You have those two faces that have always gone out there and talked. No matter what's going on or how things are going, they're two of the faces out there. And I believe both of them handle it very well. Cena was the face of the company for a long time, and he handled the media very well. The impact's smaller, but it's still, how does Tessa handle that spot now? Because I feel like...
Seth Rollins probably didn't handle it as well as hoped here, right?
Yeah, see, and that's the thing. That's a perfect example of a guy almost... I don't know if he was catering too much to Vince and what he was saying, but what he tried to do didn't work. Now he's in a spot that I think is good for him, and I think is a good spot for the company overall. The little heel fraction he has going is a nice little thing to have, and it makes for interesting TV. I hope it stays at the size that it's at, but we'll see where it goes from there. But you're absolutely right. 2019 was supposed to be the year of Rollins, and after Mania, he really struggled, and it was because he didn't know what to say to the media.
He did not know what to say to the media. I think you're right. He pandered to Vince too much, but he did not know what to say to the media. I mean, will it draw a rating for TNA? Maybe. Or Impact. I keep calling them TNA. Old habits. Impact Wrestling, maybe it will. Because, let's face it, how much time in the last 2 years combined have we spent talking about Impact Wrestling compared to what we've given them tonight?
This is triple the time.
Exactly. So I guess there's that, but we're not talking about them in a positive light. And and we've seen this with Vince McMahon when he'll tank a show or tank a segment because he knows that it's going to be train wreck TV and he's going to get people to watch, and like, you know, like that wedding segment, things like that with Lana and you know, Bobby Lashley, and people hate that. And he thinks that's a good thing because he's like, we're getting heat and we're getting attention. People are talking about us. It's not a good thing. Anything that happens that gives you a 1 or 2 week bump that costs you long term is not a good thing.
No.
And this is long term. It just doesn't feel good for Impact Wrestling.
No. It's a shame because I would have been very curious how, had this not come out and this, well, let me rephrase this. Had this never happened and Tessa had a clean background, what type of reaction would this have gotten with her, and how would she have done it? It would have been very interesting to watch, because and now any results that you get from this are tainted because of what's happened.
Yeah, absolutely. We can't get a clear sense of this at all. It's impossible.
Yeah, and I mean, you look at it like for the longest time, the women were the best part of WWE. Like they were having the better matches, they were having the better angles, and I even think the Becky Asuka feud heading into Rumble's great. It's a long term story that WWE has been forced to tell, and I stress the words forced because there's no way.
It's completely accurate. Forced is completely accurate.
And I think it was by Becky and Asuka of just like, this is money. Just let us do our thing and it'll work. And I think that'll be one of the marquee matchups for the Rumble. Like, will be Becky versus Asuka, and I think they're both going to deliver. But it's the thing where you got to see how Becky did after Mania, being in the main event of WrestleMania, which is a big deal. Not a lot of people get that moment. And Becky, Charlotte, and Ronda got that moment, and you got to see how Becky handled it. And I mean, from a booking standpoint, it was meh for the most part with what they did with Becky, but I thought she handled it amazingly, and I think she's continued to show that she's probably WWE's biggest draw right now, outside of NXT.
Yeah, no, I don't disagree with anything you said. You know, she did a good job with it. That's it. I don't know if she was getting less, you know, promotion time than Seth Rollins. It was less out there, even though she's the face of the company. But we heard about her less, but maybe that's a good thing. Yeah. You know, even, you know, she might be getting just as much, and just, it's just because it's not necessarily negative. I mean, that's, she's a person largely, though, she's a master of social media. She's a master of using Twitter to get angles over and do things on herself. And, that's, you know, an incredible trait she has that, that a lot of people could learn from.
Yeah. And I mean, you look at even her social media game before all this happened, before she came the man, she just had a great presence about her. She always seemed very friendly and always very outgoing and always very, very humorous. Like there was humor to her social media. But you've seen that all go away once she became the man, and she's really driven home that gimmick. And I think she's, like you said, she's done well with it, and it's an incredible skill to have, because there was a point where her and Ronda's Twitter feud was more entertaining than what they were doing on TV. Like, I remember more of what they did on Twitter than I do they did on TV, which I think is crazy, because it just shows that sometimes you need to let the talent do their own thing. And I know this Tessa situation is not ideal, but if turn it into a positive, it's looking at someone like Becky and looking at how she handled being in the spotlight, because Impact's not that big of a promotion. WWE is the biggest promotion in North America, and I think there's more pressure on Becky than there is on Tessa, and I think Becky showed how you handle that. There's also no allegations against her, which make a hell of a lot of difference. But it also just shows Becky as a person as well, that there are no allegations. There was no speaking out against her, because it seems like she's a very well-liked person and well-respected. That makes a difference for you.
It makes a massive difference. It's, you know, it makes a damn massive difference for the company. It makes a massive difference for the fans and the locker room. You know, yeah. It's a game changer.
It's going to be very interesting, and we'll be following along with this Twitter Tessa battle that's gone on back and forth. And I mean, she's going to be a free agent in the summer. I'm going to say it right now, January 14th, 2020. I wouldn't be shocked if she ended up signing with WWE. I'm just going to say it now. I wouldn't be shocked. This is the company that brought Warrior back after, you know, you hear all the stuff of what Warrior said and believed, and they have his wife in the company as well. So nothing shocks me. I mean, the fact that I could go on a long list of what they have. But so the point is, I wouldn't be shocked if Tessa is in WWE by the end of the year.
I would be. I absolutely would be shocked if she gets in there. We'll see what happens. I would be.
It's going to be interesting, because there is going to still be that watch and see what happens with her. Another thing, we'll go to a smaller story before we get to the other big story from the weekend. How up to date are you on David Starr and Gabe Sapolsky?
Not too much. I know, I think, what was it? David Starr called him a carny promoter, didn't pay well, and Sapolsky fired back, and I know they've gone back and forth some, but give me the timeline a little bit better.
So the timeline's basically that there have been several different wrestlers, Darby Allin and a few others, saying that Sapolsky basically said, well, we're not going to pay you as much, but you're getting that exposure to WWE because we have connections to WWE, so we don't have to pay you that much. That was kind of the allegations. Sapolsky kind of shot them down. He's like, oh, no, we pay fair. And then they had a back and forth between David Starr, and who is a very, very interesting figure in professional wrestling right now with his independent movement and wanting to unionize, and just everything that he's done in OTT. It's a very interesting person. And I don't think it's a bad to have a person like that in professional wrestling, especially independent wrestling. But basically, it was a whole back and forth. Sapolsky sent out big, long tweets, just trying to rip David Starr apart. Then he later apologized and basically said, well, if I could pay everyone what they're worth, I would, but I can't. So if you can find a business model for me, let me know. And that is kind of the gist of it, is this talk about payment in independent pro wrestling. People brought up Hunter's comment about killing off promotions in the UK that aren't safe and not paying workers, that gobbling these promotions up are best for wrestling. It brought up a lot about unions, the safety and the payment of professional wrestlers. And I think they should be paid very well. And I think they should be, because again, we circle back to it again, La Parca died of an in-ring accident. Anything can happen. We can go through the list of guys that have died in-ring or have had serious injuries that have changed their lives. I mean, we can bring up Chris Benoit. It's a point of, you know what you're doing, but you should be paid for what you're doing. What are your thoughts?
Well, and I mean, it's a complicated thing. Honestly, La Parca was there in his early 50s. So, I mean, the idea that in his early 50s, you're still working in the ring, that's always a little uncomfortable to me. You know, if he's working in the ring, let's put it this way. If he's working in the ring because he has to, and that's why he's doing the looking to get that next booking, and that's why he's doing a dangerous spot, that's really uncomfortable. Yeah. You know, and yeah, I think he was 53 when he passed. So it was two, three months ago that the injury occurred. So yeah, really, you know, pretty scary stuff when you really break it down on that level, that, you know, that's what happened to this guy. And it is a complicated thing, because like if you're an independent promotion, or a promotion like Sapolsky or you know, some of these promotions, if you don't bring in one big star, you won't draw any sort of crowd. If you bring in one big star, they take up all the money, and yes, you draw a good crowd, but you don't have anything left for the others. So this is where it becomes a really difficult thing. I mean, you hear about Steve Austin, you know, every time he has that Broken Skull Ranch, there's a point where he talks about breaking in and making 15, 20 bucks a night, you know? So this is hardly a new thing. This is the way it always should be. So yes, the wrestlers should be getting paid more, but it's true. There is no business model to allow them to be paid more at this point. Not based on what the house that they're going to draw. If you draw, you know, 300 people for a independent promotion, you know, that's not a bad night. 500 is a terrific night. But how much money does that actually give you when you look at all the different expenses it takes to put on a show? And that's before you pay one or two big names to help draw the crowd. And then what's left for the rest of the guys. So it's a very difficult thing. So this is where I come back to WWE is talking about killing off those independent promotions. You know, Triple H talks about that. I mean, I come back to, this is where I see AEW, and I think to myself, this is the biggest change you could make. I mean, they talk about, Cody talks about having not a union, but some sort of governing board. Frankly, all these small promotions, it's like, yeah, you got to live on your own, but it feels like this entire industry should be doing some sort of revenue sharing to me. Like you see in, you know, I mean, baseball, where you have a revenue sharing system because small, and that allows the smaller companies to compete to some degree with the larger ones and ensures, you know, profitability. The NHL also has something like that, a revenue sharing system, you know, for the lower end people to get a little bit more than from the higher end teams. And this ensures a success for the entire league. Well, if you look at wrestling and you look at these independents, like they're part of a league because these are the feeder system to WWE. If WWE didn't have these evolves and these different things as their feeder system, you know, ROH and just the different independents, PWG, if these didn't exist and they were counting just on recruiting people to the performance center, to the PC, yeah, then we'd be getting nothing but Lars Sullivan's and you know, and guys like that. Like, you'd be looking nothing at – it would be only these kind of big name or you know, former athletes. Like, you look at the people that come in for the tryouts, and they'll be like – it'll be like 20 wrestlers and like 20 people that are athletes that they've gotten from elsewhere, and they'll sign like 10 of the athletes and like one or two of the wrestlers, but – it's not until you make a name for yourself in the independents that they're interested generally in signing you. But yeah, so I mean, I wish there was some sort of revenue sharing. WWE and AEW, everybody, just, you know, especially the companies that have it, to those smaller ones. So that's why when I AEW, we'll talk about Marty Scurll, but this is where I would love to see them. If they don't need those other companies so much, AEW, but if they were working with more of these other ones and finding some way to help funnel money through them and giving them a rub, that would be just good for everybody.
Yeah, because at the end of the day, yeah, you can look at it as it's all about making money and it's how much money you draw, and you got to keep drawing money. But if you're drawing well enough and you can bump a little bit to that small little promotion that can then pay their guys appropriately, that they basically just... I'm not saying you have to pay them handsomely. I'm saying you have to pay them so that they can live. You should have essentially what would be considered a living wage. You look at where they are, where they live, et cetera, et cetera. But you look at that and you give them that little bump, then it's one less thing that they have to worry about. And then God only knows what talent they're going to produce that you're going to make millions of dollars off of in a couple years. So it's more beneficial for wrestling as a whole. Fortunately, that will never happen because the biggest promotion will never go for it. Because at the end of the day, it's all about that money.
It's all about the money.
Vince McMahon.
Did I just bring you back a bad memory?
It's
all about the money.
I didn't realize until one day I was sitting there, I was thinking, it's like, man, I have so many Vince McMahon memories in my head. It's just, he's so ingrained and he's so splattered onto my life as just being around and watching wrestling for as long as I have. It's just wild how much impact he's had on it and just will continue to have, because WWE will still continue to be a promotion that will have impact on everyone. There's a lot of bad memories from that man. There's a lot. Wrestling's like 90% bad, and then there's that 10% that's great.
Yeah. And Lord knows he's given us both.
Like, if you go through, for every Austin in the beer truck, there is a wedding segment, or a hand being birthed, or told Eddie Guerrero's in hell. Like, you could rattle those off and then go, oh yeah, you remember that one great segment that they had on that one random Monday Night Raw?
Yeah. And that's the one you'll want to remember. There is the Russell crap out there and stuff, but I don't sit there and talk about what's bad. I don't sit there generally. My memories, I talk about what was good. Like, that's what you do.
Yeah. Like, I mean, there was a clip online that showed when Mick Foley was going to face Hunter. And he's like, it's not going to be Mankind. It's going to be Cactus Jack. And he tears off the mask and he has the shirt. And Hunter looks stunned and he's floored. And Cactus Jack is racing down to the ring. And the crowd's going crazy because this guy took a mask and shirt off.
Yeah.
And transformed himself into Cactus Jack. And he's like, this is wild. Like, this is the good stuff of pro wrestling.
Exactly. This is what you wish you were getting all the time.
Yes, constantly. And speaking of bad pro wrestling and hoping for the best, Ring of Honor has had some big news. Marty Scurll.
I don't know that they ever had bad pro wrestling. They had bad press. They had stuff that wasn't exciting. But I don't know if I don't know if I'd ever say bad pro wrestling. I think that's unfair.
Okay, well, we'll walk it back. We'll go mediocre to potentially some good news. Everyone was wrong where Marty went, because it sounds like Marty has signed a multi-year deal and the most lucrative contract in Ring of Honor history, where he is reportedly getting WWE main roster money to stay in Ring of Honor, work 40 dates a year, and essentially be the head booker or one of the key bookers in the company, along with Delirious. So that means, according to the rumors, Bully Ray is out of there, and we're going to get a very different feel to pro wrestling. And when I saw this story, one of the first thoughts I had was, remember that conversation I had with Mo where he said they should get wrestlers like Brian or Cassius Ohno to book and be in charge of creative because the wrestlers are better at it? I just did it with Marty. First off, my biggest question to you, Mo, is, and I've seen this online, does this speak negatively to AEW, or is it just simply a deal that was too good to turn down?
Yeah, it's the second one. It's the second one, because we know that he wants to try and forge a relationship with AEW. That's one of his goals, is to forge a relationship with AEW. And to me, that, if anything, that speaks well of them. But yeah, I mean, who's going to turn this down? Main roster money for limited dates plus a chance to implement your booking ideas? Like that's really cool. And yeah, I mean, I Marty Scurll, when I was talking about people, I mean, it was, yeah, Cassius Ohno and Daniel Bryan. I think Colt Cabana would be an incredible booker and be fresh, you know. And it was people like this. And Marty Scurll at 31 is still, on the ascent in the wrestling industry in ring. Wasn't on my radar, but I think it's really exciting, really interesting. And I can't wait to see kind of where this goes.
Yeah, and I mean, we've seen what Bully Ray can do. And I believe it was reported that Bully Ray was a big part of Enzo and Cass coming in, and that moment still sticks out as just being such a crap moment at MSG. it irks me. It still irks me. I'm very curious to see how Marty does. This is going to create a lot of interest. And it sounds like there's so much politics with all this. But if somehow a relationship is formed between Ring of Honor and AEW, that's big for AEW and New Japan. That's big for everyone, because I know that like AAA has the deal with AEW, and CMLL has the deal with New Japan and Ring of Honor. So that creates a very interesting wrinkle in all this. But good God, this is going to be very interesting to watch. Ring of Honor has really piqued my interest. And I mean, I don't know if we're seeing the impact Marty has, but we've already seen that El Phantasmo and Jay White are confirmed for the ROH card that will be happening Mania weekend, the Super Card of Honor. So that's a big deal, especially someone like Jay White being in town for WrestleMania. That's a big name to have. That's one of New Japan's four pillars. And the rumor is that there's still a marquee matchup to be announced yet for that. So this is big. Like this shakes up the wrestling landscape yet again.
Yeah, so it's a bit of a bounce back, obviously, a year ago. I mean, at WrestleMania, they're selling out Madison Square Garden, and now they're now Jay White, they're not nearly at that level, but it's a bounce back from where they were, and all the negative slide that they were on, the downhill slide that they were on. It definitely feels like it's going in the right direction. Now, I don't know how much is Marty and Jay White, that probably is long-term thing, and Hunter has an excellent relationship with Hunter Johnson. The Delirious has an excellent relationship with New Japan in the past. And I mean, we have seen New Japan for many reasons pull back their guys, and I do think we'll continue to see them less into ROH. But to me, what's big about it is, like we talk about, Marty wants to forge a relationship with AEW, which is what ROH should have done in the first place. Because if ROH had partnered up with them when they first launched and were still getting Cody and these guys to come in at the time before AEW took off and surpassed them so badly, I don't think ROH's momentum ever would have faltered. but AEW's would have continued to be what it is. Like ROH's momentum would not have, they wouldn't have gone through the slump they went through. And honestly, there's enough for both of them to have succeeded. And not only that, I mean, because they were on such a rise, but not only were they both succeeded, but they shouldn't have been looking at AEW as competition. I don't think ever. I think they should have been looking at them and going, it's all of us versus WWE. Yeah. We're all one. We might have different names, but we're all one big company and with many, many territories, and they're trying to take on WWE. Like that's the way you're trying to do it to me. You know, you need each other to do that. So anyways, so if he wants to forge a relationship with ROH and AEW, and is able to do that, they say, ideally it would be because AEW wants to give back to everybody else, but yes, you know, business wise, there's not much. I mean, for AEW to partner with ROH, because AEW is much bigger at this point. They you know, 100,000 pay-per-view buys, you know, they sell out buildings still for pay-per-views. They draw several thousand still weekly for their television show. They get, you know, a million plus viewers especially when you include the PVR numbers, you know, they're so far ahead of ROH that it's not like, this is not like two companies close to the same level getting together. So you'd think there isn't much for them. To me, it is that the only thing that is the tie that binds, so to speak, is the relationship between ROH and New Japan, and whether or not AEW is, and I know there's a lot of hard feelings there and back and forth, but if ROH and AEW were able to start working together, because that is one of the things that is keeping AEW from working with New Japan, is the fact that New Japan has the relationship with ROH. If we can get these three companies working together, and working with ROH creates a bridge to forming a relationship with New Japan that helps AEW's business grow even further, as well as helps that of New Japan or ROH. But just from AEW's perspective, if they can forge that relationship through ROH, that to me is the part that makes it possibly worth it. And I don't know, you know, I don't think any of us knows, but that would be, because there's absolutely no doubt in my mind, as popular as AEW is right now, that if they brought in, you know, Okada, that they would draw a bigger rating that week, much bigger rating, or a pay-per-view that would normally do 100,000 would do 150, you know, and so that makes it worth it to them, to me. But we'll kind of see.
Yeah, it creates, it's very interesting, because now suddenly I feel like Ring of Honor is on that very slow uptick. If you announce a guy like Ospreay for Supercard of Honor, if you announce a guy like Tanahashi, Naito, one of those, Kenta even. If you announce Kenta, I think that's a big name for this relationship, and helps out. It just creates more buzz and more positivity for your company. I'm very curious to see how Marty books. That's the biggest thing, because you're going to get where everything that's good on Monday Night Raw is Paul Heyman's idea, and everything bad is Vince McMahon's, which I don't think is entirely accurate. I think you're going to get the same thing with Ring of Honor. The bad stuff's going to be
just 95% accurate.
Yeah. Anything that's good is going to be, oh, that was Marty's idea. Anything that's bad is like, oh, Marty had nothing to do with it. But Marty's sitting there and being like, well, I might have come up with that idea.
Well, that's the thing I got to say, is you got to keep in mind, Delirious, Hunter Johnson, is not a bad booker. He's a very good booker. He's probably the third or fourth best booker on the planet.
Who's your top five?
I mean, he might be number two. I don't know. I'd have to think about it some more. Sapolsky would probably be up there too, right? But, I mean, the fact is that Hunter is, a year ago when this company, again, is selling up Madison Square Garden, he's booking it. He's led them to that point. Yes, he had the talent, but he also helped foster that talent, helped make that talent, helped book that talent into getting over. He's an exceptionally good booker.
So having him back in his spot is basically what I'm picking up is having Bully Ray away from the book is a good thing.
I think having Bully away is not even so much the book. I think it's having Bully Ray away from, again, I think Bully Ray at this point in time creates a negative
presence.
Yeah, I think he creates a negative presence for both the locker room as well as the fans. I think that there's enough about him that has come out that's much like Tessa. It's this kind of stuff that I think that in 2020 no longer is acceptable behavior and people don't want to hear about it or don't want to see. So I think that's kind of my take on Bully. It's not so much about the booking as it is about the
idea of Bully.
Yeah, what he represents right now.
And I find that even myself included, when you have something that has a negative connotation with it, like there was for a while, I haven't really watched WWE. I'm just like, but it's not because there's none of the performers are good. I think they've got tremendous talent, and I think they've been putting out some decent stuff. I really like what they've done with Drew. That's probably my favorite thing to see because he just seems to be showing so much more personality and just seems to be more letting himself just be himself. And he's coming across very well and he's connecting with the crowd. But it's still that negative connotation that's connected with the company that I'm like, I don't want to watch this. I don't want to have anything to do with this. It's the same with Ring of Honor. You know that Bully's booking and you're just like, after MSG is just like, who cares? I don't want to have anything. I don't want to be invested in anything Ring of Honor related. Just no, put it away. Put it away. Yeah. And don't let me watch it. But now you've got someone that has a lot of positive will. I feel like the Marty that we've seen in BTE and just the Marty that you hear about from behind the scenes and just interacting with fans has such good will that kind of gives ROH a little bit of leeway for a little bit for booking, where it's before the pressure was on. I feel like this kind of releases that pressure and you're like, all right, Marty, let's see what you've got for 6 months.
Well, yeah, absolutely. What do you think is a big reason why AEW is being a success?
It's
goodwill. Yeah, it is the fact that people look at the Bucks and Cody and Kenny Omega and think those are good guys. They're trying to do good things. I like them. I like not their characters. I like them.
Yeah.
I like who they really are. And like, go ahead.
Like you look at like Kofi. When Kofi won the world title, that was probably the biggest reaction of the night. And that's a knock on how long the Mania card is. But you hear all these stories about the New Day and you listen to, like now you listen to their podcast and you just hear how much fun they're having. But you look at like how Xavier Wood behave online and Big E behaves and Kofi, they just felt real. Like they're real fun people that are enjoyable and you can look at and be like, I like these guys. And I think that played into why that match between Brian worked so well and why Kofi got to that point was because the crowd saw what the New Day was, saw who Kofi was and was like, I like these guys, so I'm going to support them. It wrestling has really become about how you are behind the scenes. The kayfabe is dead, and it really matters how you behave on social media and how you behave at meet and greets and everything as such.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you can still kind of stay old school on your social media and in your how you behave to people like Chris Jericho does without being, without doing it wrong, I guess is probably the best way to put it. But it's true. I mean, Bully Ray just doesn't have that.
Yeah.
Bully Ray just he doesn't have that. So it's good to move on from him.
Yeah. And I mean, you look at Ring of Honor can start funneling a couple guys into the G1 again. Best of the Super Juniors getting some guys some more exposure makes Ring of Honor suddenly this place where you want to sign. and you want to go and work at. Whereas before, I feel like people were a little bit more like, yeah, I don't know about this. But with this change, I feel like it opens up for Ring of Honor to be a spot to sign. And I think that's a good thing, because then you have one more spot that people can go and wrestle in. And I think that makes a big difference.
Well, it's like a breath of fresh air. That's the thing, right? It's a breath of fresh air to get a, you know, to get somebody fresh in there. It's a good, we haven't had this much good to say about ROH in a while.
Yeah.
And he hasn't even done anything yet.
I know it's very wild. I'm very interested to see. I was kind of curious to see if there was anything on BTE kind of hinting at anything, or because the last BTE they had Hangman talking about their buddy that was trying to throw a New Year's Day party and no one showed up when he was drunkenly stumbling around. So I was kind of like, I'm kind of curious because I don't care what you say. Everyone in like the four main guys had to know what Marty was doing. Because this negotiation had to have gone on for a while.
I think it's, yeah, I mean, it'd be tough to kind of keep that stuff. Yeah, it's a tough line, just put it that way. That's a tough line to try and be like, I'm friends with you, I'm talking, I'm still trying to negotiate. And I'm sure it was all very, probably very open and honest. Let's put it this way, actually. I wouldn't be surprised if the Bucks said to him, God, that's a great deal. Take it.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. No, I wouldn't be shocked either. I absolutely wouldn't be shocked either. I think that's the other big thing that appeals about AEW is these guys aren't sitting there going, well, you didn't sign with me, so I'm going to sit here and pout about it. Because there were times where WWE would be like, oh, they wouldn't sign with us, so screw them.
WWE would do – they would bury their friends for not signing with them. They would – like all sorts of terrible stuff.
Oh yeah, and you look at this where it's like, ah, you got this, and it's an incredible deal. Anyone that hears about this deal goes, fuck, I would have taken that. That sounds incredible, and it's less wear and tear on a 31-year-old that I think has a really bright future in professional wrestling.
Yeah, absolutely. I you know what? That's true. If you gave me the chance to work for NXT and have to work their schedule, or the chance to work in ROH for 40 dates, which is probably more than you still might work for AEW, but with even more pay plus a little booking power, I probably would have taken that ROH as well. Plus, it's something in the ego, right? It's like, okay, I've taken this on. If I can turn this around, man, what does that make me? What does that make me? And if I don't turn it around, probably I don't know that there's anything. Honestly, I don't know if he doesn't turn around, if there's anything negative about it. I don't know if anybody would blame him. Be like, you know, I think all he's in a win-win here.
Yeah, unless he runs weekly Katie Vick angles, and I mean like the actual Katie Vick angle over and over and over and over and over again. I think Marty's going to be fine for booking. And I mean, like one of the things that always stuck out to me from BTE was one of the episodes where they were all for Wrestle Kingdom and they were talking about Marty, and they showed a picture of Marty sitting there and hand sewing his wings for his costume that he was hand making himself. Like, this guy is no slouch. He works very hard. He is incredible for merchandise and just for being just an overall, just you see him and you're like, I like this guy. Like, Marty seems like just a fun, charismatic person that you get drawn to. And that's from his first Ring of Honor vignettes. That was his Ring of Honor vignettes were the first time I ever saw Marty, and I was instantly hooked. I was like, who is this guy? What is he? Where is this all going? And it just, I'm really happy for Marty. We started with Tessa. I'm glad we got to talk about Marty because I'm happy for him. I'm really excited to see what the future holds for him.
Yeah, no, it's if that's the end of the show, we're ending on a positive note. What the hell? Let's end it on a positive note.
Yeah. Just I do have one question.
Sure.
Brian Cage, rumored to be signing with AEW. It's kind of murky waters. The wife came out and said that there's no true. He hasn't signed on the dotted line. Doesn't mean he's not going to. What do you think of Brian Cage and what he could potentially bring to an AEW?
Brian Cage is a very good worker. You know, he knows how to do the power spots very effectively while still having the agility and quickness to not look awkward and to fit in with you know, cruiserweight type guys. So for AEW's roster, like, he's very short. He's short, right? I don't know what he is. I don't know if he's 5'8", 5'9". I don't know, something like that. He's not a tall guy. But tell you the truth, maybe 5'10" tops. But that's not that short on AEW. And there he'll look like a monster. It'll be good exposure for him that he finally has deserved. He's been at it a long time. He's worked super, super hard. And he's finally going to get exposure on national television. That said, I do look at him and Wardlow, and I do wonder what kind of wellness policy they may or may not have. Because I was in WrestleMania, and the reason I say he's not that tall and that he might even be like 5'8", is because I was at WrestleMania a few years ago, and he was coming out of the gym, and I walked past him. And so I saw him. I saw in person on the street, not in a wrestling place. So I saw exactly how tall he really is when he hasn't got any sort of lifts on or anything like that for his costume. I saw how big he is. And I saw and when I say how big he is, I mean how, you know, size wise, but I also saw how big he is as far as no natural for human being. That is not a body you get from natural, any sort of, I don't care how hard you work. Like, I don't care. It's not humanly possible to have the type of physique and build that he had. He was just in a pair of shorts and, you know, what was a towel around his neck and walking out and sweating like mad. And yeah, it's not human. You can't, your human body cannot look like that without some sort of something to help you to get there. I'll say it personally. It's just impossible. I do wonder about that.
It's going to be very interesting. The current rumor is that he's mulling over different offers. And the other rumor is he did tear his bicep. And that leads to my next point of being he is 35 and he is apparently he's billed at 6 feet tall.
He is not six feet tall.
It creates that dynamic where, okay, you're 35, you've torn your bicep. I mean, you bring a guy like, because I've seen the athleticism of Brian Cage, and I've seen what he can do, and I think he's a great talent to potentially have, but it does create that little bit of like, all right, how many questions are there going to be about your wellness policy? And just 35 and had torn a bicep, how much more miles does he have left to give? So well, it's going to be...
I'm just going to say this on that. I mean, I don't know how many more miles he has, but I will say this. You'll recall somebody else who I don't believe in any way, shape, or form was without any enhancements. Once tore his bicep jogging. Jogging, he tore his bicep, I'll repeat. Jogging. That was Batista.
Jeez.
Yeah. Anyways, you were saying...
I never knew that story about Batista.
You don't know that story about Batista tearing his bicep jogging? That was the very first time when he had an injury. He was kind of first time he was getting a push and he got an injury. That was what it was.
Wow. Yeah. And he, I love Dave, but yeah, that size is not normal.
No, it's not possible. And remember, he's also much smaller than he was, when he was a bodybuilder. I mean, when he wrestled, I think he was billed at 305. When he was a bodybuilder, he was billed at 375.
Holy crap.
So you can imagine what he looked like then. I never looked it up, but I know he was much bigger. He added a lot of quickness and stamina in order to become a professional wrestler from being the bodybuilder that he was.
Wow, that's impressive. That is certainly impressive. But I think that's where we end things. We'll see what happens with Brian Cage. I'm sure we'll get an inclination of where things go moving forward and how his injury impacts it. We'll follow
the test. There's your show picture, by the way. Dave Bautista as a bodybuilder.
Oh, God. Just like, what are they talking about? Why is this image up here? And then get to the end of the podcast to find out.
It's nothing. It's nothing. You're like, where shouldn't it have been Marty Scurll? Should it have been Tessa? No, Dave Bautista, because we talked about him for the last 30 seconds.
No, he's earned it. All right, Mo, any last thoughts before we walk away?
No, it's amazing. I've had any thoughts before at all so far.
We got through the show. We gave our thoughts. We talked about. Oh, just stay off Twitter. Just don't, as a wrestler, just delete Twitter and walk away. Just unless you're Becky, don't do it. Thank you for coming on, Mo. Make sure you check out everything that We Talk Podcast have and are continuing to do. You have any good shows coming out in the next little bit, Mo?
The new season of Kung Fu Electric Boogaloo has just started, so 8 episodes of that, the Search for the Ultimate B-Movie, and it's season, what is it? I think it's season 10. Every season is 8 episodes, so 8 new brand new episodes coming out. This one is called Enter the Octagon. Basically, each of us have – we always make a pitch for what the season will be. So it'll be like, oh, okay, this season will take place in space, or this season will feature movies from this studio. And we always democratically vote on it. And this time what we've done is we've all pitched together the idea of having a movie represent a season that we want to do. And they're entering the octagon versus each other to see which movie scores highest. And then that person will get to pick the season based on that. So it's a little bit of a competition. So it's a little bit different. I think it's going to be some of our best stuff.
Nice. That sounds fantastic. And anyone listening to this just has to – it's just probably a few clicks away from finding the first episode. First episode's out, Mo?
The first episode dropped today, the day we're recording this. So, yes.
All right. So once you're done –
yesterday. The day before we recorded this, yesterday. But either way, it's out.
By the time this is up, the
second one will probably be out pretty soon. They'll drop twice a week for 4 weeks.
So then that gives our listeners something to go and check out, and I'm sure that they can go and check out Fresh Take and everything that Josh Arbuthnot's working on right now. Thank you for coming on, Mo. Do you want to lead us out with a joke?
I can't think of any, honestly. Now, if I wanted a joke, I'd follow you into the washroom and watch you take a leak.
I think you've already used that one, but
I know, but it's a classic. It's coming right from trains, planes, and automobiles, and I couldn't think of anything else.
We'll end on that. Thank you for listening, and we'll be back next week with more wrestling madness, because Twitter will continue to let wrestlers have a platform. They let a president have a platform, so they're going to let wrestlers do the same.
Yeah, the wrestlers seem pretty calm in comparison to that.
Oh, yes. All right, thank you, Mo, and thank you, everyone, for listening. We'll be back soon.
Goodbye! And good night, Ben!